You know, when you search for something on Netflix, what you get is only a fraction of what they really have? The streaming service actually has more than 18,000 titles globally, but only about 6,000 of those are available in the good old US of A. That means you're missing out on literally thousands of great shows. Unless, of course, you use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN is an app that lets you change your online location, protecting your devices from unwanted snooping and allowing you to control where streaming services and other websites think you're located. There are over 100 different locations to choose from, which means you have access to thousands of new shows and movies no matter where you live. This doesn't just work with Netflix, it works with Disney Plus, Hulu, Max, a UK streamer called BBC iPlayer, and more. I was on a work trip in the UK during the final season of Game of Thrones, and I tried logging into my HBO account to watch a new episode, but the technology wouldn't let me because of geo-blocking. And I wish I had this app at that moment, because I now realize how incredibly easy it is to work around that problem. Here's a more recent example. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia is not streaming on Netflix in the US, but I just fired up the episode where Dennis tries to have a peaceful mental health day, and technology keeps interrupting his plans. All I had to do was open ExpressVPN, connect to a UK server, refresh Netflix, and the show just popped up. It's super easy. I've also heard good things about that show called Billions, but I've never been a Showtime subscriber, so I've never seen it. But it's actually available right now on Netflix in South Korea, and with ExpressVPN, it took 5 seconds to switch over and start checking it out. With ExpressVPN, you get high-quality streaming from devices like your phone, laptop, tablet, and TV, and crucially, it protects your privacy and security to keep your information safe from hackers. Stop missing out on great TV and get thousands of new shows with ExpressVPN. We got them to give you all 3 extra months free when you use our special link, expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film to get 3 extra months completely free.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for Monday, June 7th, 2021. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the latest film and TV news. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm the senior writer at SlashFilm.com, and I am joined on today's episode by Slash Film writer Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris, let's talk a little bit about Indiana Jones 5. There's some new news in the world of indie. What's going on there?
Yes, Indiana Jones 5 is currently shooting in the UK, and some set pics leaked online. And they show a stuntman on a motorcycle. And the most interesting part of this is the stuntman was wearing a mask, like a latex, or almost like a Halloween mask, if you will. And it was a Harrison Ford mask. And it's not Harrison Ford as he looks now. And, you know, not to say Harrison Ford looks bad. He looks great for his age. But, you know, obviously he's older now. But the mask appears to be a younger Indy. And that's making everyone assume that we're getting some sort of flashback to Indy during the war. I should also add that there were people like dressed up like Nazis on the set. And while that's, you know, more of a normal thing than I would like it to be in present day, these were extras in a film. They weren't actual Nazis.
I see. They did not infiltrate the set. Okay. Yeah. Good to know. So what do you think about this, Chris? The idea, well, first of all, do we know that it's not Harrison Ford wearing a younger Harrison Ford mask? Because that would be pretty amazing.
Yeah. Because at one point the actor, the stuntman fell off his motorcycle and the mask flew off, and it revealed it was like a younger stuntman.
Wow. Okay. All right. So my idiotic joke aside, what do you think about the idea of a flashback like this? Indy is not necessarily a franchise that's known for its flashbacks, right? It's been a while since I've seen all these movies, but
you know, yeah, like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade has that big prologue where it's him as a teenager played by River Phoenix, but mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't really do flashbacks that much. So yeah, I'm not really sure how this will be. I mean, I like the idea of Indy fighting Nazis again, because those movies are always great when he's punching Nazis. Oh, so yeah. I have nothing wrong with that. I guess the only thing I'm a little worried about is, you know, they're going to probably, if this is a flashback, they're probably going to digitally de-age Harrison Ford. And sometimes that works really well, and sometimes it does not. I feel like Captain Marvel is a great example of this, where the Samuel L. Jackson de-aging looked really great. But then there are other examples where they de-age someone, and it just, it's very noticeable. And it, mm-hmm. like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want like CGI Harrison Ford running around. So I guess it really depends on how big, I mean, how long the scene's going to be. And, mm-hmm. You know, obviously it's not gonna be like the whole movie. Like that would be really freaking weird if it was like, you know, digitally de-age Harrison Ford for the whole movie. But, yeah, you know, I'm all in. I love Indiana Jones. I've all, you know, I'm a big fan of the franchise, like of the two big Lucasfilm franchises. Well, most people I feel like were Star Wars fans. I was always more of an indie fan. I didn't really like Star Wars as much, but I liked Indiana Jones a lot more. So even though, you know, I wish Steven Spielberg was directing this and he's not, I, you know, I'm still excited for the film.
Yeah. Yeah, man. You and I are on the same page there. Even in terms of like being more of indie fans than Star Wars fans, which may be like blasphemous on this podcast, which talks about Star Wars like all the time. But yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about a Vertigo video game that's coming. So this was sort of surprising news. Today we learned that a video game based on or sort of inspired by Alfred Hitchcock's classic film Vertigo is coming out later this year. Vertigo came out in 1958, and in the year of our Lord 2021, we were getting a Vertigo video game. So there's a sort of announcement teaser about this and some information about this game. I don't want to go too much in depth, but I just wanted to put this on people's radar because I actually think it sounds interesting once you get past the like what the hell is going on of, you know, the very premise of this movie getting a game adaptation. So it's not actually a one-to-one adaptation of the movie, which starred Jimmy Stewart. It is instead a movie that, or I'm sorry, a game that sort of takes inspiration from a bunch of different Hitchcock properties, including Psycho and Rebecca. And really it takes the themes from Vertigo. So, you know, we're talking about obsession and memory and perception and identity and manipulation. And it sort of pushes the players through this mystery narrative. The official log line of the game says, writer Ed Miller came out unscathed from a car crash down in Brody Canyon, California. Even though no one was found inside the car wreckage, Ed insists that he was traveling with his wife and daughter. Traumatized by this event, he begins to suffer from severe vertigo. As he starts therapy, he will try to uncover what really happened on that tragic day. So that kind of setup is very familiar. I feel like there are several movies that sort of take that sort of general idea of like a man who has lost his family, and like the Jodie Foster movie Flight Plan comes to mind too. So, you know, movies that sort of get inside characters' heads, and this game is going to do that where it actually lets you play, control three different characters and try to fill in gaps of like what's actually going on. And you're able to like explore different environments and sort of cross check the events and, you know, pinpoint what is actually going on versus what are deceptive memories that are sort of clouding your field of judgment as a character. So, yeah, I just thought it sounded kind of cool. Chris, I know you're not like a big gamer, but, you're a Hitchcock fan. So are you interested in this at all?
Man, I don't know. I mean, I'd rather this than a Vertigo remake, like a movie, but the character designs just look really, they look like they're from like Crazy Taxi, that like arcade game from yes. like the 90s.
Wow. Yeah.
Like I watched like the trailer, and like while the, I don't know what you would call it, the landscapes look mm-hmm. great. Like they look cool, like visually, but the characters look really weird. And I get not wanting to, you know, have video game Jimmy Stewart running around. Plus they don't have the rights to do that anyway, but I don't know how I feel about this. It's a little weird.
There is a part of me, Chris, I have to admit, that would love to control a Jimmy Stewart avatar yeah. in a video game. But all right. So, yeah, you can watch the trailer in the link in the show notes there. Let's talk a little bit about a movie adaptation of The Munsters, which is a 1960s? Is that when that
yes,
show was out?
1960s.
Okay. So I guess, Chris, just in case, you know, some of our younger listeners might not be familiar with, you know, TV Land reruns and things like that, maybe set up The Munsters and then tell us who is making a Munsters movie.
Okay. The Munsters is basically a big Addams Family knockoff, but it still has its charms. Like the Addams Family, it's about a bunch of weirdos living in a big creepy house and how they deal with normal people. And the difference is, whereas the Addams Family, they're all just kind of like weird looking humans. I guess they're human. I don't know what the Addams Family is. On this show, they're monsters. Like the father is a Frankenstein's monster, and the mother is a vampire, and the son is a werewolf, and so on.
Okay, so then, so who is now making this 1960s TV show into a movie in modern day? Or is it going to be set in modern day? Do we know about that?
We don't know anything about it, but we know that Mr. Rob Zombie is directing the film. And this is something he's wanted to do he's been talking about doing this for at least 20 years. And earlier this year, a rumor surfaced that it was finally happening, but we had no real confirmation. But Rob Zombie has now confirmed it himself, and he just said, you know, stay tuned for more info, but you know, it's happening. So there you have it.
So Chris, it's been a long, long time since I watched The Munsters, but my memory of it is that it's sort of kind of in the same vein of The Addams Family, like a sitcom with a twist kind of thing, where it's actually a lot of, you know, like laugh tracks and like jokes like delivered, you know, based on the situations that are here. And Rob Zombie does not strike me as a guy who is really known for his comedic taste. So what do you think about the combination of filmmaker and subject matter here?
You know, it's tough. I'm a little conflicted here because when it comes to Rob Zombie, I think Rob Zombie is a really good visual stylist. Like, he makes movies that look really good, and then everyone starts opening their mouths and the movies go really downhill because he is not a good screenwriter, and for some reason he makes all of his characters really vulgar rednecks. And look, I have no problem with vulgarity, I curse all the time, but when I'm watching a movie and a character is saying like fuck constantly, it just starts to really seem weird. I feel like there are very few people who understand how to do that right. Like Quentin Tarantino and Martin Scorsese know how to do it. They're really good at making it flow naturally. There's like a certain rhythm and cadence to it that you have to get. And Rob Zombie does not understand that. And he just has them just being like, oh, motherfucker. And they're all Southern. I don't understand that. I don't know. So with all that in mind, I really don't know how to feel about this. I mean, I will absolutely watch a Rob Zombie Monsters movie. I just want him to hire a writer. I feel like Rob Zombie directing someone else's script would result in a really good movie, and that just hasn't happened yet.
Mm. Well, I am like, I think completely unfamiliar with the cinematic output of Rob Zombie. I don't think I've seen a single one of his movies. So I guess I can't really add any follow-up comments there, but man, just the idea of like the Munsters being a thing again in, you know, in this time. And like, I guess I just remembered just now that there's that Netflix show about Wednesday Addams. So there's like a resurrection of these old, like almost kitschy 1960s shows that seems to be in the air right now. I don't know what's going on, but
yeah.
All right. So let's talk very briefly about one of the new voice cast members of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse 2, or whatever that movie is ultimately going to be called. Chris, who's the latest person to join that film?
Issa Rae will be voicing Spider-Woman, who is, you know, another spider person in the very expansive Spider-Man world where everyone is a spider person. That's such a weird, like, it'd be, I guess Batman has like, he has the Bat family, but they're not all Batmen. It's just weird that there's like a million spider people in the Spider-Man world, but what do I know?
Yeah. And they're often like, you know, it's the same kind of thing where like, I also was bitten by a radioactive spider. Yes. Like, it seems like you're
it's like, how many radioactive spiders are there? There's so many.
So Issa Rae is playing Spider-Woman. I don't know anything about this character other than that her name is Jessica Drew. Chris, I don't know if you have your story that you wrote for SlashFilm.com pulled up in front of you, but if you do, if you could just read the part, like just verbatim, the sentence that you wrote that begins, in the comics, the character has, just because I was very amused by some of her comics backstory there.
Yes, I looked this up. So in the comics, the character has a very complicated backstory involving magic, science experiments, Hydra, S.H.I.E.L.D., and even more wacky stuff. And at one point the character even died and then came back from the dead, but that happens a lot in comics. But yeah, so they're gonna have a lot of different backstories to pick and choose from here.
Yeah, she was a private detective at one point. I mean, this character's history just seems wild. I mean, I guess a lot of characters' history, especially ones who have been around for a while, go through a bunch of different iterations and stuff. But yeah, I've actually never seen Insecure, which is the HBO show that Issa Rae is best known for, but I know that she's, you know, like certainly has a lot of fans, and she seems like a good fit, you know, in with the Lord and Miller school of comedy. So yeah, hopefully this will be pretty great. I don't know if we can really offer any more, because the basically the plot of that movie is still being kept pretty under lock and key. So yeah. All right. So before we transition out into the, I think we're going to bring Brad on to talk a little bit about Loki in a few minutes. But before we do that, Chris, I know you had the chance to watch The Conjuring, The Devil Made Me Do It, and then speak with the director of that movie. And I just wondered if you could give us some brief thoughts about that film and how you reacted to it. And then maybe just a couple highlights from your conversation with the director.
Yeah, I like The Conjuring, The Devil. It's called The Conjuring, The Devil Made You Do It. I love The Conjuring series in general. I like the main movies, the ones that actually are called The Conjuring, more than all the spinoffs. But I just really like the series in general, primarily for Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, who play Ed and Lorraine Warren, who were real people, but the real people were probably con artists, for lack of a better word. Whereas in the movies, the Warrens are just these really selfless, almost saintly figures who just love each other and they love to help other people and save them from ghosts. And this movie gave me that. It changes things up a little bit. You know, the first two Conjuring movies dealt primarily with haunted houses, and this one does not do that. So that's a bit of a difference. But, you know, as long as Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga keep coming back and making these movies, I will watch them, just because I really just like watching them play these characters.
So a guy named Michael Chavez directed this movie, and you had a chance to speak with him. What were sort of the takeaways that you had from that conversation?
Yeah, I have an interview up with him on slashfilm.com, and it was a pretty good conversation. He talked a lot about, you know, this is like all the Conjuring movies. This is quote unquote based on a true story. And the true story here is a little tricky, because whereas the other true stories are, you know, our house is haunted, and you can either assume that's true or not, this one deals with a murder that really happened. And when that was first announced, it kind of made me a little uneasy, because it's one thing to be like, there were ghosts in our house, but it's another to be like, the story here is the guy who killed the guy who committed the murder says he committed the murder under demonic possession. And I'm just going to come right out and say, like, that didn't happen, because that's not real. Like, you can believe it, whatever you want. If you want to believe in the supernatural, that's fine. But come on, let's get real. He did not kill someone under demonic possession. Maybe he thought he did. Maybe he was mentally unstable and thought he did. That's a possibility. Mm-hmm. But obviously he was not really possessed. But of course, these movies, you know, they present the fact that this guy was possessed. So when I was talking to the director, I was, you know, I asked him, you know, how do you balance that? You know, how do you remain respectful to someone who really got killed while also telling this, you know, scary story? And he, you know, he talked about that. I don't want to like give away the things he said, but he talked about, you know, he thought, you know, he said it was important to be as respectful as they possibly could to, you know, the real life murder. And they did that basically by altering a lot of the facts, and they actually changed the murder victim's name and all this stuff. So, you know, stuff that, you know, gives them a chance to take liberties with the truth. And, you know, elsewhere in the interview, I asked him, and this actually got broken out into a whole separate story, but it's in the main interview too. The other two main Conjuring movies, they set up spinoffs. Like the first movie set up Annabelle, that the scary doll, and the second one set up The Nun. And this movie doesn't have that. And I asked him why did it happen? And he actually revealed that the first cut of the movie actually did have a setup for a spinoff, but they felt the spinoff character wasn't working. And they actually went back and recut the movie and cut this potential spinoff character completely out of the film. So I just thought that was an interesting way of how they, you know, they go about making these movies and testing them, and sometimes things don't work and sometimes things do. And so,
yeah. And that actually, like, I'm surprised that they were able to show that restraint and like make that choice, because it seems, you know, we're always fairly or unfairly, I think, talking about how crass Hollywood can be. And, you know, this franchise in particular is very extensive already and super successful. And like, you could easily imagine a case where they're like, yeah, it's not great, but we're just doing it anyway. Like, who cares? Yeah. We're just going to, you know, put this out there because people don't necessarily need to experience the quality. Like, we can just coast by on name brand alone. So I'm actually like impressed that they were like, you know what, let's not do this.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Me too.
All right. I think that's going to bring us to the end of this portion of this episode. So Chris, before you go, why don't you tell people where they can find more of your work online?
I am at slashfilm.com every day, knock on wood. And I am on Twitter at CEvangelista413.
All right. Thanks, Chris. And now we are bringing on a Slash Film Weekend editor, Brad Oman. Brad, how's it going?
Oh, not too bad.
So, Brad, I don't know the full extent of what you've done here in terms of your interviews with people involved with the making of Loki, but I know that you've seen a couple episodes of Loki, and we're going to be doing our big breakdown episode later on the podcast this week. But why don't you just give people a couple 1-2 sentences sort of reaction to the show, and then maybe just run through some highlights of the conversations that you had with the folks who were involved in making it.
Yeah, I mean, I love the show right out of the gate with the first two episodes that Disney and Marvel provided critics for advance review. It's just this great mix of what everyone already loves about Loki that takes him in a new direction, allows you to dig into this villainous persona he has in a surprising way, takes him on a path that allows him to kind of examine his place in the universe. It definitely has this like kind of existential crisis vibe to it, but it also brings with it this kind of like dark, wry sense of humor in how bureaucratic and mundane the time travel aspect of this series is, with the time variance authority and what Loki gets caught up, you know, doing to help them out. It feels like it could have easily been like a live action episode of Rick and Morty, not quite as insane or, you know, violent or raunchy, but just conceptually. How they approach sci-fi in this particular way. And, just Tom Hiddleston, man, just chewing scenery, and the way he's teamed up with Owen Wilson, they're these great foils for each other, but they also have, it's a mix of, I fully understand what Michael Waldron was saying when he referenced Before Sunrise as being an influence for this movie now, because the dynamic between them and how they have these conversations about time and each other and Loki's life, it's just, it's very introspective and existential, and it's just a really cool series so far.
Interesting. Okay, so this is a totally unfair question since you've only seen two episodes, but how would you compare it to the previous two Marvel Studios shows that have been out on Disney Plus already?
I personally think that it's probably the best of the Marvel series so far, and that's mostly just because of what I like, you know, what's in my wheelhouse and the things mm-hmm. that particularly tickle my fancy. I still love how WandaVision was set up, but that was also more of like a long con, you know, where it took you time to really get a grasp on the show and what they were trying to do. Mm-hmm. And this one just throws you right into the mix, and like it, unloads exposition on you, but it does so in an entertaining way. It gets really nerdy really quickly. And it's clear why the show will have, you know, big ramifications for the MCU in the future.
Man, I'm excited to watch it. Okay, so I know that you had a chance to speak with Tom Hiddleston and Michael Waldron. Was there anybody else? Or
there was a press conference that came later, but like I wasn't actually talking to anybody about it. So those are the two that I had one-on-one interviews with.
Okay, so maybe just run through a couple of the highlights of those conversations. Were there any big takeaways from, you know, anything that you learned or any just, you know, fun moments or anything?
I feel like the funnest moments came as I was trying to find out things about how the show, whether it has more of a future or how it will affect the future. And it's kind of funny because much of the entertainment kind of came from non-answers, which, you know, obviously we're always trying to like see if, Kevin Feige or the filmmakers behind these shows or the stars will talk about anything that will reveal, you know, more of the grand plan of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And so, you know, when you ask Tom Hiddleston about, you know, whether he has any hopes for what will happen to Loki in a potential second season, he has to tap dance very cleverly around mm-hmm. it. And so, and at one point he said, you know, let's get to the end of the first season first. And then I said, it sounds like that the end of the first season could potentially, you know, be a setup for the second season, if that's the case. Right. And he goes, and just goes, season one has an ending. And that was it. So, and I even joked with him. I was like, well, that's perfect. That's going to be the headline. And we actually did make it the headline of that story. So, and hilariously, another strikeout was funny, but my conversation with Michael Waldron was much more expansive than what we did as a breakout story today. Cause I was really curious about what he brought to the table from Rick and Morty, what he learned about from writing on that show that he used to help craft this series. But man, when it came to talking about, you know, again, a potential second season for Loki, any lead up to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, or Kevin Feige's Star Wars movie that he's writing, mm-hmm. I could not have been like shut down more quickly. But I will say that it was fun learning nothing about those projects and talking to him. So the full interview that will be arriving later this week has some more, you know, deep dives into just his work behind the scenes on the series and Tom Hiddleston's approach to the character and how he, you know, tries to do something new with every performance, even though he's playing the same character. You know, how he makes that a challenge and a unique experience for him and things like that. So keep an eye out later this week for those full interviews.
Excellent. All right. I think that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. Brad, where can people find more of your work online?
Oh, Ethan_Anderton on Twitter, Bradford Omen on Instagram, or you know, my other fun Instagram at Look at Brad's Junk about, you know, snacks and collectibles and things like that, and always at slashfilm.com.
Excellent. All right. So you can find more about all of the stories that we mentioned on today's show at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes of this episode. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Google, Overcast, Spotify, all of the popular podcast apps, and send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at peter@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends, spread the word. If you want to track me down online, I am also writing at slashfilm.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ben Pears. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.